Coming to you from the Morningstar Mission sponsored studio, this is Carl and Crew Mornings.
Happy Thursday morning. Does anyone know the Happy Thursday Morning song?
Teach it to me.
Yeah, would you?
Happy Thursday to you.
It's like birthday.
Come on, join me. Happy Thursday to you. Happy Thursday, dear Boom Crew. Happy Thursday to you. Yeah.
Are you going to do that all morning?
Yes.
Okay.
And bless everyone with that.
Okay. That's the happy, bless everyone with that.
That's the Happy Thursday song.
Yeah.
Ooh. So, got a question for you guys.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
You ever heard that great little phrase from a movie way back?
Hmm.
Here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Oh, of course.
No.
Remember that one?
Yes. No.
What's
Where'd
the
that
movie?
Come from, Super Die?
Flip Wilson character. Comedian Flip Wilson, he did this character.
You be the jury, and I'll be the judge. Here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Oh, that does kind of sound familiar. What movie is it from that?
No,
what movie is that from?
It's not a movie.
It's not a movie.
You just said a movie.
I know, I misspoke, but she got it. See,
it was a TV show. Look up Flip Wilson.
No, I've not seen that one.
Oh, yeah.
Not heard
Okay. How many years has it been since we've said something like that, Super Die? I mean, that has not come off my lips for forever.
All three of them. Haven't heard of that. Okay, then.
Yeah, I know.
Go get my arthritic medicine. I'll be right back.
Oh, no.
Give me a shot of Bengay when you got a chance.
No problem,
Thank
friend.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes. Back to singing.
That's so disappointing sometimes. Okay. Anyway, so here's where we're at, guys.
Yeah.
The way to set up what we're talking about right now is, have you ever seen People's Court or Judge Judy?
Yes.
I remember People's Court. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I watched it all the time. I don't know why as a young kid. That was one of my favorite shows. But
let me ask you some honest questions.
Okay.
The people that came before the court, what was your general impression of these people?
I mean, I thought it was a hilarious show.
I did, too. But why?
I mean, the,
did you ever get embarrassed for any of the plaintiffs?
I mean, sure. The disputes were always kind of
so
petty and,
stupid.
It was courtroom entertainment. It was definitely cases were picked and people were picked. It was
based
the whole
on how
thing
funny
was set
they
up.
Would be.
But it was kind of reality TV before reality TV was really a thing.
No, you're right about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I mean,
you liked it?
I did. I loved it.
To
be honest,
most
it was fun. I'm just going to be honest. It was fun to laugh at the people that were doing some silly stuff.
Some of the stuff was crazy. I mean, some of these people came in trying to defend themselves with things that were absolutely indefensible.
Oh, yeah.
And then the back and forth.
Yeah.
I always think of my brother, who's 6 years younger than me. So he was really little when we were watching these shows. And we watched it so much that I remember one time in the grocery store, he went up to somebody. He was probably about four. And he goes, "Hi, I'm Doug Llewellyn. Welcome to the People's Court."
He did not.
He did. To this day, it's you know those stories and families that you can never live down.
Yeah.
So we give him a hard time. Nick, remember when you said to that woman, "I'm Doug Llewellyn. Welcome to the People's Court."
Oh, no.
That's how you know you've been watching too much courtroom drama.
That's great.
Is Doug Llewellyn still with us?
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know. Somebody Google that up. See if Doug Llewellyn's still alive. What's so funny about that?
Why is this a thing you do?
I like to
You're
see
like, is
people.
Is that person still
people,
alive?
Well, a lot of people I know are keeling
God
off.
God bless them.
Left and right. They're just peeling off like banana peels.
Looks like he's 82 years old.
Oh, good.
Oh, see, there you go.
Doug Llewellyn. He is still with us. That's why it's good to know Sputnik.
Totally. Yeah. Just
who's the guy that went up on the,
William Shatner?
Yeah, William Shatner.
How did you know that?
But he wasn't on the court show.
No, I know.
No, but he's 90 and he does crazy things.
He's 90 and he does crazy stuff.
Okay. We're trying to keep up here.
All right, guys.
Coming up, we're talking about judge shows and all that because there's a lot of you that wonder, should we ever be judgmental? And that's a really good question.
Yeah.
What does Jesus say exactly? That's coming up straight ahead.
Helping you start your day with a boom. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
So you've seen the guys walking around with the placards that say, judge not, right? And they're quoting Matthew 7, verse 1. And these are usually on the Supreme Court steps. And it's usually when people want something passed that they don't want anyone asking questions about.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't ask questions about this. Judge not, you preachy Christian.
Well, and that's, I think, how it's often used, is kind of a retort, a comeback. Doesn't, you shouldn't be judging me. Doesn't the Bible say not to judge?
Only God can judge me.
Yes.
I've seen that like as a tattoo, too.
Well, that was a waste of money, because this is what the scriptures say. Judge.
Rough.
Judge not.
Very rough.
Hope the art was good. Talk about out of context is pretext. Yeah. That's what they should put below it.
Yikes.
Anything out of context is pretext. Tattoo that on there, because this is what we've got here. Verse 1 and 2. Allie, you want to take it away?
Yep, this is Matthew 7, verse 1 and 2. Says, judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.
Okay. So this is really important. And the way I like to describe it is this. Listen, don't be judgmental, as in you've got a character where you just judge people, but do exercise judgment. Why is that so much different one from another?
Well, I was going to ask you the same thing. What is the difference, being judgmental and exercising judgment? I mean, isn't that semantics?
It could be. But being judgmental, what do you think of when you see in the word now is judgy, right?
I'm
seeing
judgy,
it everywhere.
Judgy, judgment. Oh, I think of, I mean, the picture that comes in my mind is like a, no offense to school librarians. I love school librarians. But I think of
to get shot at.
No, I think of the stereotypical kind of school marm who's got the bifocals down on the nose, wagging a finger and saying, don't you do that. That's what that's the image in my mind when I think of
judgmental. Yeah, and when I think of judgy, I think of someone that sits back and pointing a finger and they're just angry. I think of anger.
I think of just like a quick comment that just sounds so sharp and judgmental. That's like the first thing that popped in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think overall it's more of an attitude behind the use of judgment rather than the judgment itself. Because you can have those things, but the way you talk about it, the way you approach it, that's, I think, kind of where it differs.
Yeah. And here's the interesting thing. I mean, are we too, we know this from yesterday. No, don't be judgy and judgmental, but you better exercise judgment. How can you assess whether or not a pastor or a leader has good fruit or bad fruit and worth following if you don't exercise judgment? Isn't that impossible?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, too, my husband and I were talking about this. It's like, what is your outcome of that judgment? Like, are you wanting something to get fixed or changed?
Boom.
Or are you just trying to talk about somebody and gossip?
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. That's exactly right. So think about this, Boom Crew. I mean, cogitate on this right now. Because I think a lot of Christians, how do we err on this one? Christians can be angry evangelicals.
Yes.
Where they are, got an opinion on everything, and they're just like, rant, rant, rant. That's not good.
No. Yeah.
But Christians can also think it's a spiritual thing to not say anything or not even see anything. That ain't right.
Right. And I think sometimes because we're aware of the stereotype, and this is, I've done this before, where I hesitate because I don't want to seem like the stereotypical judgy Christian.
Yeah. No, it's true.
But don't you think that judgy Christians, and I've been there, it's pointing the finger outwardly at people who don't know Christ more so than inwardly at other Christians.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. Because I think there is a lot of people, but talk about the ultimate hypocrisy of being judgy is pointing at non-Christians.
Yes.
When you know theologically they don't have the power or the will to live any differently.
It drives me nuts.
It drives me batty because it's like, stop it. Why are you asking? We should never expect of lost people to act like saved people, number one.
Yeah.
And then we should be careful to look at the household of God, and judgment needs to begin there. But there's something that happens that needs to happen even first and foremost. And this is a classic case. So we talk about any text out of context is pretext. You read verse 1, you could be reduced to a puddle of, oh, I'm sorry. I should never exercise judgment.
Judge not
anything.
That you be not judged.
I'm never going to have an opinion.
There.
I'm not even going to have an opinion on anything anymore, God. No. Then you read on, and what do we read in verse 2?
For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.
Mm. All that means is the way, same way that you're judging others, remember this, that's a boomerang effect. It's going to come back on you. And this is both... this is almost a colloquialism that was put to words by Jesus, because mm-hmm. this was actually by Greek poets used in this way, that the words that you speak are going to be the very words that come back to you. Well, in the same way, the judgment that you impose on others will be imposed back to you. It's just the way the world goes around, just the way she rolls, man.
Yeah.
So listen, coming up here in a moment, we're going to hit something really fun, and that is... if you're going to try to exercise judgment, there's a sure way to judge rightly. Isn't that good to know that God's got a plan for us here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is a sure way to judge rightly. That is coming up here in just a moment. By the way, what's you dinging me already?
I'm so sorry. I moved something very lightly like a pen. Like,
I'm sitting here thinking, when I heard the ding, I'm like.
I didn't even hear him say the time.
I didn't even see the time. You thought the same thing, didn't you?
Sorry, Boom Crew. No, that was my bad.
All right. Well, at least you admit it.
Yeah. Don't judge me.
Oh, that was well played.
Thank you.
By the way, one word I want to give you here that we have not given you in the 5 o'clock hour, and I want to make sure you get this. Before we go one step further, we're going to talk about how to judge rightly in a moment. But right now, come on, let's take some primetime real estate to tell them about an $11,000 trip for two to Israel. You got to know about this, Boom Crew.
This is the Israel Tour 2021 Flyaway Contest. You and a guest could win this once-in-a-lifetime free trip to the Holy Land. It's going to be in 2022 with Moody. You will join expert tour guides, President Mark Jobe, Dr. Michael Rydelnik. Enter. You got to enter to win. This is a biggie. Text the word TRIP to 312-274-9624. We'll send you details, rules, and an entry form. Just text TRIP to 312-274-9624.
Coming up, how to judge rightly by God's standard. You're going to love this.
Get more from your morning show. Check us out on social media. Just search Carl and Crew Mornings on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, here we go, man. On this beautiful Thursday morning, we're talking about why you should never, ever judge anyone. Right, Allie?
Yeah.
Don't ever judge anyone out there. It says it right there, chapter 7, verse 1.
Judge not, and you will not be judged. But wait a second.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
Literally. Verse 2 is the more. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.
This is good. Okay, so what's it mean? It means, look, don't be judgy or judgmental, but do exercise judgment. And know this, one of the things that'll kind of put a governor on your judgmentalness is make sure you know that what goes around comes around. How you judge others is going to be brought back to you. Isn't it funny how we are so quick to get judgy on people, but we get so offended when we hear about the same thing happening back to us?
Now, should we understand this as this is the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Is that how other people will judge us? Is that kind of it goes around, comes around, or is this how God will judge us?
I think it's both and. Okay. I think this is a general statement that this is both the way of the world and the law of the Lord. I think both are in play, because that's exactly what we find, not only in Deuteronomy, but all through the scriptures, that we got to be careful because the words that we're using are going to be used against us. So we move, though, on now to knowing how to judge rightly, because, listen, exercise and judgment you have to do. Otherwise, you couldn't fulfill some of the other teachings that Jesus has in the Sermon on the Mount.
Right. We're going to be called daily to make judgments, to use discernment, to use wisdom in an untold number of decisions.
By the way, how do you know someone's a fool, mocker, or a scoffer if you can't make a well-calculated decision and a judgment on their character to know to walk away from them, according to Psalm 1?
Yeah.
You can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, how in the world are you going to know they're a fool, mocker, or a scoffer?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you go, I perceive this person beeth a fool. All right? You've done it.
And God gave us a brain, and parts of our brain are
a great one.
Put just for that, to have instincts to know, hey, this has happened before to me, and so I'm going to not go down this path, not trust this person. So there's warning signs, and our brains are set up that way.
Yeah, and then we, yeah. I mean, it's a foolproof system.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but, before you go one step further, we read on. Because there's more, and it's not Ginsu Knives.
No.
You want to? I'll read it. You want to read it? Verse 3.
Verse 3. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye.
How about that? I mean, how cool is that? Oof. I mean, that's some... Now, why is this so important, Allie? Why is this so critical?
Well, it's a principle that is so true to life. I mean, I think of this, I've always called it this, don't be a spec specialist. So you specialize in going around and identifying other people's flaws, but yet you fail to ever take a hard look at yourself.
Yeah, and this is a cool little metaphor here, because Jesus was a carpenter. And he's using some sawdust and beam illustration here. So he's and by the way, this is very real to life. Have you ever helped someone? Have you ever been a person who's gotten a little something in your eye? It's irritating,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it? And it's small.
Oh,
and
oh
then
yes.
My bride's had me, Bub, look here. Get close. Can you see it? It's in the corner. There's something. I'm looking. Well, Jesus is saying, what are you doing? You're looking like crazy in there for a problem in your brother's eye. Well, you've got a 2x4 that you can almost construct a brand new deck on your home with hanging out of yours. Mm-hmm. That's what Jesus is saying here.
And the language is really strong. I mean, verse 5, you hypocrite.
Ouch.
First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. You can't say that the word of God is not practical.
It is so practical. So here's where we go. Coming up, we're going to talk about this. What in the world does it look like to get the beam out of your own eye? How is this done? We're going to break it down, get practical, helping you take your next step with Jesus. Good morning, Boom Crew.
Talking about Jesus and having fun while doing it. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
All right, guys, let's break it down. But first, we got a trip to Israel. Shh.
Oh man,
sound effects and everything.
I want to get some music so we can set the scene like you're in an outdoor cafe in the Holy Land. You could win a trip for two. You and a guest could take a once in a lifetime free trip to the Holy Land in 2022 with Moody. Guess who's going with you? Mark Jobe, our president, Moody Bible Institute president, and Dr. Michael Rydelnik will be your tour guides. This is an incredible giveaway, so get signed up for it. You're going to hear about it more in the coming weeks. But if you want the contest rules, the details, the dates, all of that good stuff, text TRIP to 312-274-9624, T-R-I-P to 312-274-9624.
All right, here's a cool little principle. This is a heavy-duty one here, but it's real. This is what Jesus says here. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. It's pretty strong language, isn't it, Alex?
It is. And this verse has always kind of been a mystery to me. It seems kind of out of nowhere in this passage.
I think in the context of the flow, and there's a lot of differing opinions on this for sure, but in the context of the flow, it's clearly talking about relationships. You can't take Jesus's words, extract them, and go, oh, let's superimpose this upon them. So the context of the passage is flowing clearly. And the context of the passage is talking about faults and flaws in people. Now, what does he say? Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample underfoot and turn to attack you. What can we learn from this at base value? What do we know for sure this says?
That there is a time where you would withhold something good, something holy, from someone because of their perceived response or the way that they will respond.
Yes. And some people, I believe, have wrongly attached this to throwing truth out in front of people. And I think it's most directly related to helping someone with a speck. Because Jesus doesn't say it's wrong to help people with a speck, does it?
No.
No.
No. He just says, get the plank out of your own eye, and then you will know to help. And then he says, some people, though, won't want help with the speck in their eye.
Yeah, and I think that it also implies that there could be consequences for having that conversation with somebody who doesn't want it, because it says, lest they turn around and attack you, you know, because they're people will have a very extremely negative reaction sometimes that can hurt relationships, that can really damage it. So the timing is important.
This is not the only time, lest you think, oh boy, Jesus is really saying don't help people that don't want to be helped. And this is kind of rare. Does Jesus ever say it? Yes, he says this. When he sends them out two by two, he tells his disciples that if they will not receive you with the message of the gospel, what do you tell them to do?
Shake the dust off of your feet, turn and keep going the other direction.
Keep walking. So this is really important. When I'm coaching young couples, so I'm coaching Ajit Christopher and his wife Katie, Janann and I go out with them because it's surprisingly to us, we've actually learned things over the years.
And he's your right-hand man as a pastor.
My right-hand man at 180 Chicago. And one of the things that we try to do is let them know profound truths like this that are often overlooked. Pastors sometimes you might say, boom, crew pastors, oh boy, they don't care. They're up there doing their own thing. Most pastors actually care so much that they wind up helping people that don't want to be helped.
Yeah.
Or trying to disciple people that are undisciplable. One of the great things for pastors to master is the art of understanding who's ready to have the speck taken out of their eye and who is not. And I'm not joking you right now. What I'm telling you is gospel truth, because wouldn't Satan, one of his ploys, be to get pastors derailed trying to help people get the speck out of their eye that don't want it?
Yeah. I mean, the emotional toll that takes, the time, the physical toll that it takes to try to continue to help somebody who doesn't want to help.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Mm. It is a big deal. What do we, how does this work? Come on, practically speaking, how does this work? How do you know whether or not you're casting pearls in front of pigs?
I think you know based on the receptivity. I mean, we're assuming that these other steps have been taken, that you have gotten before the Lord, taken the speck or the log out of your own eye. Your attempts to help that person are met with resistance, are met with hostility, are met with accusations.
You bring up a great point, Allie, when you said it makes, if we've done the other steps properly, if we've been on our feet, taken out our plank, what we're talking about is you're probably only getting half the plank and the one that you most find most easily removed.
Yeah.
But if you're on your knees, you know, a humble person trying to help another person get a speck out and they're really humbly doing it and they're getting dissed, it's time to walk away.
Yeah.
It's time to walk away.
Yeah, totally. I could see that.
Other thoughts, questions, ideas? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking, too, if they haven't physically walked away from you as well, and not only that, but if they walked away and then started a slam campaign even against you and what you're trying to do, that can just really make you shrivel up.
Let me tell you, this is really weird. This happens. I haven't had it happen a lot, but I saw this happen to someone in ministry where they were trying to genuinely help this person with their thing. And I watched this person get cussed out in a church, a pastor, get cussed out in a church lobby viciously. I couldn't get over there quick enough to get this person away. And I thought, this is a classic case in point. This person needs help desperately. This person is humbly wanting to help them. And what do they get? Cussed out in a church lobby.
I think we've all had an experience like that. And so
it's heavy duty, man.
It's real. And that's why it's so discouraging, I think, to even think about confronting or coming to somebody and saying, hey, let me help you with this.
And doing it again. Right?
And then having to do it again. And especially if it's somebody that you have to see every day.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a hard thing.
Okay, coming up, we're going to talk about what do we do? What's the spiritual DNA that's going to take to make this happen. We've already talked about humility, but there's more than that. Let's break it down. Coming up, straight ahead.
Go back and listen to your favorite episodes with the Carl and Crew Showcast. Just text SHOW to 312-274-9624.
Okay, so before you walk into the people's court, you got to be the right kind of person. It's Carl and Crew Mornings here. We're talking about judging rightly today. Before you become a person that applies Matthew 7, 1 through 6, what kind of a person do you need to be? Come on. We've been talking. Let's go over what have we visited so far.
Well,
what
we've visited humility, being on our knees before God to get the plank out of our own eye.
Mm-hmm. Before we help with the speck in the other.
Moving the whole thing, not just parts of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and man, I'm willing to admit that. When it's easy for me to own sin that's ownable. How do I say it? That doesn't make sense. Yeah, it does. It's easy for me to own sin that is convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or have you ever had this feeling where someone confronts you on an issue and you're like, actually, I'm not going to own that because I don't see that in my life. Have you ever been there?
I actually have not done that. I've tried to look I usually go back to,
but that's to, your,
to have, my wife okay. and I'll say, babe, somebody said this. Mm-hmm. Do you see this in me?
Yeah.
And sometimes my wife will say, yeah, I do. Or, no, they're smoking crack.
But that's like, I've had that happen where that's my first reaction.
Oh, I think in my heart?
Yeah.
Oh, when I get confronted, my first reaction is don't mess with me.
Okay. Yeah. That's not always my first, but when it does happen, that's the worst. I have to like really rein it in.
No, here's what I'm saying. I may not even say it, but inside me, I almost always have a moment of no. And then by God's grace, he'll humble us. But we got to get to a point. I'm convinced of this, man. Andrew Murray is not wrong when he says the absence of humility is explanation enough for every abhorrent behavior that we see in mankind. The presence of humility is the only posture to come in to deal with this stuff.
It's the birthplace of all other virtues. So humility is required if we're going to judge rightly. There's just no way around it.
Yeah. And genuine humility really wants, I think it's the birthplace of wanting the best for the other person for sure.
I think it takes a posture of, you know, when you see those courtroom scenes and the judges kind of sitting elevated up behind a big platform and they've got a gavel.
Why do they elevate the judge?
I don't know.
It's a power.
But I
posture.
Think if you're going to judge rightly from a biblical standpoint, humility requires you to kind of take yourself off of that elevated seat.
Bingo.
Where you're kind of looking really down on everyone else and giving your judgment to taking a posture where you come along beside somebody acknowledging, hey, I got lots of stuff going on with me too.
Hey, something just dawned on me. Mm-hmm. Why is your stool chair always taller than mine? No, it's not. But no, there's something about, I mean, here's a funny thing. You know that in some of the old books by Napoleon Hill and some of these life hack dudes, they would say that when you're interviewing someone, make sure your chair is higher than theirs.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that for sure.
Remember?
Wow. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's so interesting. Because psychology behind it.
It's the psychology behind it is its power positioning.
To position yourself on a higher plane than other people. But if you want to judge rightly, you can't have yourself on a higher plane.
No. That's a really good mental picture.
No, you're down there in the other box and they're up there. Ouch.
Yeah. Wow. That's good.
Okay.
It's this dadgum servanthood stuff that Jesus keeps talking about.
You get low.
You gotta low. Go low. Okay. Coming up here, we're going to have a lot of fun here, guys. We got something really cool coming up. It's the Thursday song.
Yeah. The Thursday song.
No.
Now, between now and this next song, you can't let me forget this.
I won't let you forget.
It's amazing how just a few minutes go by and I can forget this stuff. So you got to make sure that you remind me.
You just don't want to get distracted.
I don't want to get distracted.
Okay. I will remind you.
I'm going to distract you.
Oh my word. There it is.
Now entering the courtroom.
Plaintiff, Allie Domerson. Yeah. She's suing Carl
for defamation of character.
And chair height.
Judge Llewellyn's looking at the judge saying, this woman doesn't have a leg to stand on.
What?
Defendant, Carl Clausen.
He's countersuing for eye rolling and derision.
Man, this is getting intense.
All rise.
I'm just over here with my popcorn watching this happen.
While Judge Super Die takes the stand.
Well, thank you.
Judge Super Die, I'd like to appeal my case before you.
Yes.
No, you don't get to.
I know.
Sorry.
Oh, man.
That's
sir, are those sardines
right
in
there.
Your pocket? Yeah. Are those sardines in your pocket, sir?
Yeah.
Bailiff?
Get out of here! Go!
Thank you.
No sardines in the courtroom!
Bailiff John Thunder.
Can't take it. Can't take it anymore. This is a whole lot. That's more than I can handle.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
All right, so coming up, we got the Thursday song, and Judge Llewellyn is going to make a guest appearance here.
I didn't distract him enough.
No, Doug Llewellyn was
Doug.
The host.
Yeah, that's right.
Judge Wapner.
Is he gone?
I don't
Why
know.
Do you keep asking this question?
No, I want to ask.
Is he still with us?
Llewellyn's still with us.
This is so stressful.
Is Judge Wapner? I love Judge Wapner. He can't
be
still
die?
With us. He's got to be gone.
Judge Wapner.
What if this happened to you someday?
Yeah. Well, he died in 2017.
The age of 98.
Whoa, he lived a fuck. That was a long life. What is going on? All these people recently that we've been bringing on, they've been living such a full life. 98. That is not young, guys.
He was born in 1919.
That's hard to get my head around, actually.
What? Died in 2017.
Oh. That is kind of wild. I mean, he wasn't even born in the 20s. It was right. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Hey, I'm Allie. You're listening to the Carl and Cruz Showcast.
Okay, this is classic, and I can illustrate it, but first, let's jump into this. Allie, we see verse 1 and 2 of Matthew 7, and what do we see? We see that to be swift to judgment is not good, but to exercise judgment can be good.
Yeah, Matthew 7, verse 1 says, judge not that you will not be judged. Most people stop, well, a lot of times people stop with just those first two words, judge not, as a blanket statement. Okay, never judge. It's never okay. But verse 2, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.
This is really good. So the question that we got to ask here is, knowing that we're going to have a measurement of judgment brought back onto us like we put on others, how should we then live? And that's when we get into verse 3 through 5. Check this out. Why do you see the speck in your brother's eye, but not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. This is a profound passage of scripture. And it's because it really pins down one of the greatest things we can do for ourselves, and that is have self-introspection before we go helping other people.
It's our oftentimes we judge people much more quickly than we judge ourselves.
Yeah.
We make snap judgments about people based on all kind of things that almost without even realizing it.
Yeah. And this is how when we look at our own life and we start seeing the challenges that we have and the lordship issues that we have, it'll make us slower to go getting judgmental on other people. So we don't have here where Jesus is saying, don't step into someone's life. He's saying, step into life after you've taken a look at yourself. I have a very embarrassing story, and I'm not going to give you all of the details on it, but it's really anecdotal, and I think a lot of us struggle with this. When my bride and I went to South Africa, we were really excited to go down there. And to be quite candid with you, one of my great fears of going into missions was that I was going to look like a missionary. Now, that's judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
But I had categorized in my mind what missionaries look like and how they acted. And I think for me, boy, this is going to be very honest but true. I thought the average missionary wasn't cool enough in my mind, just being really straight.
Yeah.
Just didn't think they were cool.
Was there reasons for that? Or
the way they dressed.
Okay.
I'm just curious. This and that. And I had in my mind conjured up images of what a cool guy was, being very honest here, guys, with what I think in my brain, but
yeah.
I So I went to Africa going, man, I don't want to be that. As if I'm Mr. Cool Man. But anyway, so I digress. When we got off the plane in Johannesburg, we went immediately to an orientation home. And here was a guy walking down. So we drive into this compound area through this gate, and then we're going to go park and walk in. And all the couples that are coming from around the country to get their orientation are landing there. And pull in, I pulled the car to the side, and I say to my wife, now there is a typical missionary. There's a guy walking in front of us, and he's walking, and he swings his head around, and he's got one shirt collar hanging out, and he's got one shirt tail hanging out of his britches, and I think one of his shoes was untied or something, which would have been classic for this guy who became one of my dearest friends in life, by the way. But I remember looking at my wife going, now there's a typical missionary. And my wife rightly goes, bub, what are you talking about? Went into the home, and in a matter of about 2 weeks of orientation, I found out this guy is so much richer in faith than I am, it's not even funny.
Wow.
And he became one of my best buds, and his name is Jim Streetlemeyer to this day.
Jim, yeah.
But the first eyeballs I set on Jim Streetlemeyer was very condemning. Now, since that time, Jim and I have had all kinds of opportunity to be iron sharpening iron. And quite frankly, Jim would tell you that he's benefited big time from me challenging him. But you know what I had to learn with Jim? Get the log out of your own eye, Carl. Get the log out of your own eye.
Wow.
Who in the heck do you think you are? But it's easy to cast judgment.
All the time. And, you know, this, if you're really honest with yourself.
You're honest.
Because sometimes we don't say the things that come to our minds. And so we give ourselves kind of a pass here because maybe we refrain from saying the things.
We got it in our heart.
But when we when we're at work and we're looking around and, oh, come on, you see, she never even works hard. You know, they're,
right.
You know, she didn't deserve that promotion. Let's be honest here. You know, these are the things that go on in our minds, these judgments that we make, not looking at the log in our own eye, but really being a spec specialist and identifying the issues in everyone around us.
You know, what's funny about that is that Jim came back to me, probably just a couple of months later. And I think I'd said something to him like, yeah, you struck me as typical missionary. And he said something like, well, to be honest with you, you struck me as one of those swashbuckling dudes. And he said I had to deal with that in my heart, too. And I'm like, oh,
too funny.
That's so real, though.
That's truth.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Super Di. Hope you're enjoying the Carl and Crew Showcast.
Let me introduce our guest, Dr. Mark Jobe, a familiar name to most of you, 10th president of the Moody Bible Institute. Also, you can hear him on Bold Steps weekdays at 1 o'clock right here on Moody Radio. Also, a new friend of the program, David Holston. He holds a BS in Missionary Aviation Technology from Moody Aviation, and he served for 17 years with Mission Aviation Fellowship in Indonesia.
This is a great story. Dr. Jobe, good morning, my man.
Hey, good morning. Before I even jump into this project, which I'm super excited about, I have to say thank you to the Boom Crew and everybody that's listening. Last week, we were in a marathon called Share.
Yes.
And people responded in a phenomenal way. And I just want to say thank you for all the listeners for your generosity, for picking up the phone, for going online. It really, really, for praying. It was a phenomenal share. Thank you for this team as well for putting in extra hours last week, but it was worth it.
Yeah,
so
it was really worth it. We echo that, Boom Crew. All of us here love you big time and so grateful for your sacrifice. Well, you know, we're all about the gospel, and that's what we were talking about. The gospel changes everything. That's why it's worth taking it to the ends of the earth. There's nothing like planes to get it there. Mark, talk about that, man.
Well, that's why I've seen this documentary film twice now, and both times there's been tears in the audience as people have seen this. Because
really?
Yes, it's not only it's a documentary, but it follows the story of some pilots, and just a very compelling story. These aren't actors. This is like real footage, real people, real tribes, real stories of you see people sharing the gospel. You hear some of the sacrifices made by people. I won't do spoiler.
Right.
But it's very good. And it was produced by Missionary Aviation Fellowship, which has been around for 75 years. Moody's training program has been around for 75 years. So we collaborated in this partnership because we believe in the mission of Missionary Aviation Fellowship. We train the pilots, get them up and going, send them over to Missionary Aviation Fellowship along with other places, and take the gospel to the ends of the earth, because the gospel does change everything.
That's right.
And I'll tell you a quick story here. I love this story. David told it yesterday. You know, you have some people saying, why are you guys messing with these tribes in the middle of Indonesia, other places?
There's
They're
a lot
so
of that
pure.
Talk now.
Why are you bringing sort of Western culture? Why are you messing up something and imposing Christianity? And one of the ladies that's working with women and children in some of these tribes where there's tons of abuse, mortality of 80% among children, women treated, I mean, just some atrocious ways, really. She said, well, I would like you to come and live as a Papua woman for a year, and then you tell me.
Oh, wow.
Because what the gospel does,
wow,
it elevates the value of every
That's
human
absolutely.
Being, women and children, because the gospel changes everything. It's not about a religious creed. It brings dignity and value to everybody.
Abundant
and so
life.
Yeah, exactly. And so David's been at the heart of this film. Love his heart. He's a Moody grad. His daughter's a student at Moody. And and he's a practitioner, too. He spent 17 years living in Indonesia as well.
Yes. So let's bring David in here. Your life's work has helped inspire this documentary. Tell us a little bit about what you do and how the gospel has changed everything.
Yeah, thanks. It's so great to be with you all. We're so grateful for this partnership that we have with Moody. Early on in the project, we reached out to the school and said, you know, we are praying that God will use this project to provoke a reaction in people, that their hearts will be stirred to consider what their role is in the Great Commission and mm-hmm. being obedient to the call that Jesus has put on all of our lives
yes.
to make disciples. And as they wrestle with that, if they get in touch with us and they say, I want to do that, how do I get prepared? We wanted to have a ready answer for them. And this school is part of that answer. It is a trusted institution around the world. I've had the privilege of knowing missionaries, non-aviation related, who've come out of the school, who were trained in linguistics or education or music ministry, and are now serving around the world. So it was just a natural partnership, and we're just very grateful to even be able to have this opportunity to talk about it. So MAF has been around for 75 years, as Dr. Job mentioned. We have this privilege of using a very unique tool in the small, you know, in the form of a small aircraft to fly into places that you simply could not be able to reach otherwise. The airplane's like this time machine. You get in it in this urban setting where our families live and where we may be based. You take off and you fly for an hour. You get out of the airplane after landing on a rugged airstrip built on the side of a mountain somewhere. And it's like you've gone back hundreds of years into the past. It's a primitive setting. There's literally, you know, stone digging tools that they're using. High levels of abuse, like you mentioned, no health care, minimal education. And it's our calling to come alongside of those who are seeking to address that sort of brokenness,
yeah.
to bring the hope of the gospel to that. And we put whatever we can fit in there that we need to take in to these locations. We use them as a medevac tool to take supplies. I've gotten to fly Bibles and medicine and 1,000 baby ducks once I had in the airplane, you know, for a project that was
awesome.
Going, I mean, anything you can imagine. And this is the great privilege that we have, and this is the sort of work that is featured in this documentary.
This documentary is going to be amazing. It's called Ends of the Earth. We're going to give you a link here in just a moment, so get ready, guys. We want you to text this in, and I'm asking you to spread this far and wide because it's going to release October 18th and 20th,
and 21st.
In select theaters and churches across the U.S. And matter of fact, let me give it to you right now. Just text the word film to get a link for this. Film to 312-274-9624. Just the word film to 312-274-9624. I know this is going to be inspirational. These kind of things absolutely light me up. But for the person listening that maybe doesn't know this, the amount of unreached people in the world is still pretty vast, isn't it?
Absolutely. All around the world, there are people who have yet to clearly understand the message of the gospel in their heart language, who've yet to read God's word in their heart language. And that is the that's the call that's on our generation to be obedient to, as we anticipate that beautiful scene from Revelation 7 of people from every tribe, tongue, nation before the throne. And that's what we get to be a part of, to reach these folks. And I think it demonstrates a fundamental truth of the gospel, that our Savior has a heart for the marginalized. He has a heart for the one lost sheep.
Yeah.
And MAF lives in the world of the one lost sheep. We live in this place of isolated people groups, and at great cost and at great sacrifice, which you will clearly see in this film, we are seeking to work with our Savior in obedience to Him to reach that one lost sheep. And that's what this is about.
One last question here for you, because there's a lot of people we have in our listening crew right now. We have a lot of people that have been with Christ and funding missions for a lot of years. I think one of the unique things about MAF, and my experience with MAF almost chokes me up, is that you guys are very unifying in that you work with many different organizations.
That's right.
And if there's something that ties all these mission organizations, it's a pilot with a plane. Give us a vision for what this does to bring tribes of Christians together to reach unreached tribes.
I love that you asked that. I actually think, again, it reflects a reality that Moody has as well, in that we are not bound by denominational lines. We are unified through this common love of the gospel to see both physical and spiritual transformation come to people. And so, on one day, I would fly, a missionary who's serving with the Christian and Missionary Alliance, and then I'd fly a translator with Wycliffe Bible Translators. Yes. I'd fly somebody from Ethnos 360, which is another group, or Pioneers, and
that's so awesome.
along with tribal, church leaders. And so it's this sort of neutral platform where unique doctrinal distinctives don't really matter. You know, we can
get in the plane and buckle up.
and we can fly somewhere. So. Yes, that is a unique privilege of ours. We serve with over 500 different organizations around the world.
That's awesome. You know what, Boom Career, I want you to hear me right now. MAF is one of the most strategic ministries on the planet right now. That's a fact, because they can go where no man goes. And I'm not talking William Shatner yesterday. they go where no man goes. And it is an extraordinarily strategic ministry. But we want you to see this film to get a dose of vision for the world that will be amazing. And I'm asking you to do something really different. I'm asking you to grab this link and then share this link.
Yes.
Share it far and wide. Because what we want to do when it releases here in Chicagoland, imagine a movie like this is out at Pickwick or something like that. We'll figure out locations. But when it releases, we want to fill this place so that they got to keep it around.
Yeah, but it's a two-night-only event. You can go to the website, endsoftheearthmovie.com, or you can text the word film to 312-274-9624. We'll get you the link there. You can check out locations, get tickets. Text the word film to 312-274-9624. The movie, again, Ends of the Earth.
Hey, this is Carl with Carl and Crew, and I'm so grateful that you listened to this showcast. Thank you mostly for being part of the Boom Crew. As we help you take your next step with Jesus, you're a huge encouragement to us. We'll be here again live every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. Godspeed.